Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I'm so delighted to be here with you tonight. It is exciting and a little chilly here in South Florida. One of the reasons we have Hot Topics from the Soul is to keep the community involved and aware of what's going on. We have guests on that we try to bring you the very best, and their views are not always our views, but we just want the information to get out so that you can be informed of all your options as it relates to any topic that is covered on Hot Topics from the Soul. I have my co-host.
Good evening. Dr. J.R. Ficklin here, and I'm excited about today. This is a great day, beautiful day in South Florida, and I'm telling you, I'm ready for some hot topics.
All right. We have a special guest, Dr. J. Can you introduce our guest?
Absolutely. We have a guest tonight, Dr. Asayemi. He's a board-certified infectious disease specialist based in West Palm Beach, Florida. Not only that, he's a medical director for Fantastic Wound Care, and he has years of experience in wound care management. But beyond that, you need to know that he's the president and the CEO of both Triple O Medical Services and Triple O Research Institute. He's also, if you would, the past president of the T.B. Roy Jefferson Medical Society in Palm Beach County, Florida. Dr. O has been on the front line and very heavily involved in clinical truths and trials and published in several journals as it relates to different things such as treatments and vaccines. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about tonight, vaccines for COVID-19. He's also the assistant professor at Nova Southeast University School of Medicine and Kansas City University. He precepts medical, nurse, practitioner, pharmacy, and physician assistant students. He has been on the front line inside of really spreading the message in our communities about not only infectious disease, but how we best protect ourselves. He is on the advisory board, if you would, of Gilead, Merck, and Janssen. He's been a speaker, he's been a lecturer, and tonight he's with us. We want to welcome to Hot Topic from the Soul, Dr. Asayemi, better known as Dr. O. Welcome tonight. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good evening, Dr. O.
Good evening.
You have such an extensive biography, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come join us and give information to the public.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here tonight.
There's so much going on the news. We keep hearing, you know, every channel has something new as it relates to the vaccine, as it relates to COVID-19. And I just thought that it would be great to have someone of your caliber on our show to bring some clarity to the confusion that's going on the airwaves.
Yeah, yes, you're absolutely right. There's so much being talked about regarding vaccine. I have to say, vaccine in general is a way to prevent an infection or a disease. So as we know, prevention is better than cure. The concern that we have now is people think that, people are thinking, is this vaccine safe? Is this vaccine effective? Those are the key questions people have. And with the current condition of politics we have now, there's so much confusion. Typically during the pandemic or any epidemic, we usually will have the physicians, the experts talk about these things. But because politics have been involved, so it's very hard for people to trust what they're listening to. And so hopefully we can clear some of those confusion tonight. And make people feel better and maybe direct people to where they can get more information if we can't cover anything tonight.
Thank you.
You know, Dr. O, it's funny. America and probably the world has been educated in what I like to call the alphabet soup during this whole pandemic. We've found out what WHO stands for, and that's not the music group, that's World Health Organization. We found out about CDC, the Center for Disease and Control. We found out about FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. And we found out a lot about all of these things. And sometimes it seemed like much of the information has been manipulated, or we're hearing some things that are contradictory. When people are going through something that we've never witnessed before, and I want to kind of draw some attention to the fact we're talking about a pandemic, not talking about an epidemic. So we're talking about greater than an epidemic. We're talking about a pandemic that has threatened the well-being, the health of the entire globe inside of this. So there's naturally some fear and panic that is coming aboard. We're seeing a record number of people every day that are being infected with COVID-19, and we're seeing record number of people that are dying each day. We hear all the news about the ICUs and hospitals being overfilled and these things that are happening. The sound of a vaccine on the horizon should bring some sense of relief. And yet it's still, because of a lot of the things that have been surrounding it, it has also produced fear inside of people. My question for you today is this. What would you say to the person who have made up in their mind, by no stretch of the imagination, that they are going to get a vaccination, and they are determined they're not going to get it because they simply do not trust the process? What do you say to them?
Well, those are great points. I think I need to address the process. I think the two reasons, two most common reasons why people are not getting the vaccine or don't want to get the vaccine, they think, this came too fast. There's not enough time. Well, let's talk about that for a second. The vaccine typically takes about 3 or 4 years or even longer to make. This one, within a year, we have to do it. And the question is why? When you actually look at the reason why, then you begin to realize that there was no shortcut made. This was actually done properly. The vaccine, the virus we're talking about is the SARS-CoV-2. Mm-hmm. We had the previous coronavirus. They all belong to the same family. You had the MERS, SARS-CoV-1, and COVID-2. All these have similar viruses. They're in the same family. So we've had experiences with the previous ones. And so we were doing some research as this were happening. So this is not something we just started doing. So we've had some knowledge about how to handle and manipulate this virus. So the reason why it takes so long to make this vaccine, because the process to make, you had to take a part of the virus and introduce it into humans and let the human develop a response to it. And then next time when they see the virus, they remember and they fight the virus. This time around, we're using a different approach, where instead of creating that part of the virus, we're actually taking the genetic material that makes those components. It's easier to make that, it's faster to make that, so we're not spending time trying to make a piece of the virus. We let the virus actually make it for us. So that cuts down the amount of time. So when we get the mRNA virus, mRNA vaccine, it allows us to do that, and the cost of producing is also a lot less as a result of that. So that's one of the reasons why, it took a short time to come up with the vaccine. The knowledge we have of the previous related viruses and the process that we're using this time. So time is not, because it took us less time, doesn't mean we rushed through it or we didn't do it correctly. The old research timeline was still the same. The old process was the same. It's just that we use a different approach and we have previous knowledge. So that's how we're able to cut that time down.
Well, Dr. O, you gave a great explanation of that, but that's not what we're really hearing out there. I think American people will feel a lot more comfortable if they really heard it kind of explained the way that you did. And I never forget when the outbreak happened and people began to hear things like COVID-19. And before they called it COVID-19, they was using the term coronavirus. And when we start hearing, we've never seen nothing like this before. And to the layperson, everything from that point on became suspicious. I mean, you would see people saying they're lying to us, and they would go and grab a can of Lysol, and on the back it says disinfect and fight against coronavirus. And people said, see, there, it's been here all along. people did not understand the fact, as you just explained, about the fact that they all belong to a particular family. And out of this outgrowth, these things have happened. Having said that, generally the way that one generally think about a vaccine working in cases, we think about, let's say, going back to the days of immunization. When I was growing up, we talk about the measles and the measles and chicken pox and, you know, mumps and all those things there. And so it was our understanding that they took the dead or weak germ and basically they injected inside of you and your body automatically formed these antibodies to fight it off later. If I'm understanding you right, that's not exactly the same process that is taking place with this type of vaccine. I heard you talk about something about genetic material inside of it. Is it safe to say that part of the vaccine to prevent this coronavirus, is it artificially made? Is it made of a different substance, or what makes it different from what we've come to understand about vaccines?
Well, that's a great point. I think this time around, we're using different approaches. So we're still using the same approach we used to make measles and mumps. So there mm-hmm. are some companies that are using the same approach where they take a adenovirus and they kind of kill it in a way, make it non-infectious, and they put the genetic material into that and as a vector, and then they inject it. They kill the actual coronavirus, kill it, and then inject it. So some companies are using that approach. But those companies are using that approach, they don't have it's taking them longer to make the vaccine. But the approach with the mRNA, which is the genetic material, that's a little faster, like I said, because the way you make that doesn't require much effort. Now, people are concerned that if you're putting a genetic material into someone, that could change your DNA. That is actually not entirely correct, because the genetic material we're putting in people are very small. When they're that small, they don't really interfere with the DNA inside us. Now, if you use a genetic material that's a larger piece, that can do that. But we're not using a larger piece. We're using a very small piece that just codes, that basically codes for the spikes, the little things, spokes on the surface of the virus. So we're quite aware of what could happen if you give a bigger piece of the DNA, of the RNA, but that would definitely can cause problems. But we're not doing that. We use a very small piece, so it doesn't have that risk people are worried about. So again, it's because people are not given this information. This information has not been talked about a lot on TV. We tend to talk about the politics of things. And right. So we're not really educating the folks appropriately. And that is creating more fear. So it's all about Republican versus Democrat. And so no one's really talking about the science of it. And so we've lost our ways. And if you can get back and really talk about the science of this, and really people would then feel more comfortable getting the vaccine.
I know that it's been said repeatedly on the news that it will be given to the elderly, people over 65, and also to first responders. And when I hear that, it causes me to have caution, because of the fact that if something hasn't been walked out to know what repercussions are going to take place in the elderly, because they're already at risk, they already have ailments, isn't that like a form of annihilation? Because, okay, let them be first? I guess I shouldn't have said annihilation. I'm thinking like that because I'm closer to 65 than I am under 60. So things like that make me alarmed at the fact that, okay, we're going to give it to the seniors first and those that have underlying issues and the first responders. I'm like, if there's any repercussions from taking the drugs and you're giving it to first responders, then who's going to take care of us if they have side effects from taking the drugs. And then the seniors, if they take it, they'll die.
Well, when you think about how many people have received this vaccine already, when you look at Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca, we're looking at about 120,000 people already. So that's a lot of people. So, and we, if there was a major side effect that was going to happen, you would have seen it to some degree. So all we've seen so far is really the typical side effects of body, you know, maybe fever, little tenderness at the site, which you see every vaccine. So, I don't think any vaccine will ever be approved if it hasn't been shown to be safe. And so I don't think this is an unsafe vaccine. I think the apprehension, again, is because of the technology of the mRNA. And you need to keep in mind the mRNA vaccine by Pfizer and Moderna has about 90 to 95% efficacy. If you look at the AstraZeneca, which uses the old way of doing the vaccine, their efficacy is about 70%. So with the new technology, you can actually induce a better response rate. Mm-hmm. In people, and the safety, there's no difference in the safety, even though we don't like to compare different studies, but we haven't seen that with the mRNA, we didn't see any more side effects that compared to the old way of doing it. So I don't think we've seen any signal that the vaccine has any safety issues at all. On the contrary, I think we, given the number of people that have been enrolled so far, we've shown that this is pretty a safe way to go.
So when we hear in the news, now, because you said something a few minutes ago, you talk about better material. We kind of went a different way in doing this. And the fact that we had previous history because of the things like SARS and all those things that are part of that coronavirus family. So would it be safe to say that there's basically a lot of politicalization of this whole thing? Things like Operation Warp Speed, like all of a sudden, hey, boy, this stuff just got created out of nowhere. And from what you explained tonight is that it wasn't just created from out of nowhere. We wasn't starting from zero. We're starting from a base knowledge of having dealt with a coronavirus, as you said, COVID, I guess, one and COVID two and those different things of that nature. Because when we hear, and I think this is what strikes fear in the heart of American people, because we saw it become political football. We saw it being taken out of the hands of the scientists in order to advance political arguments and ideologies. And so all of a sudden, here it comes, just in time for the election. And that created this type of situation. But I guess my question, why aren't we hearing enough individuals, infectious disease doctors like yourself, really taking the time to kind of explain it this way so that the people will understand the fact that, this isn't something that just was made like that. We did have a baseline. We did have stuff that we was working with already. We are working from knowledge that we had before. And therefore, we're not starting from zero. We're there. And that's where we are. Rather than going with the other story that basically said, Operation Warp Speed, we just got together, we just made this thing happen that quick. Because it does present this false sense of, I'm going to look at you kind of sideways, something happening that quick, especially when the story we hear is what you said before. It normally takes some time, 3 to 4 years, 7 years, and all those things. But as you explained tonight, and you've done a great job explaining it, when you're working from knowledge and you're working from some things that you've had, we're not actually starting from zero. We're better than that. Because I think that would have given the people comfort of knowing the fact that we're not a novice. We call it novel virus, but we're not a novice in the way that it's being treated.
Yeah, I think the politicians really took advantage of the situation here. And there's a collection of politicians that want to take credit for the work of the scientists. They didn't let the scientists talk. They were doing the talking for them. And even till now, the politicians are saying, well, this drug worked for COVID, this one doesn't work for COVID, even though we have data that suggests, for example, hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. But yes, as of today, there are people who are still writing for that drug because of what is being said by politicians on TV. And I have people who stay at home taking this medication, and they come to the hospital, they're very sick because they wait so long, they're taking a drug that we know doesn't work. And then they come in here so late in the disease process. Now they're very sick, when they could have come in very early because they thought, because the politician said this drug worked, so they're going to take it. Mm-hmm. So I think we've gotten into that trouble. I mean, people like Dr. Fauci has been saying, trying to talk, and in fact, he's talking about what I mentioned tonight, about how the process of vaccine has been made. But, you know, these people have been silenced. I mean, so they didn't really get the opportunity to be the forefront in terms of engaging the public like they used to during the previous pandemic. And I think if we can change that around, people will have, you know, more trust in the system. We have to put these guys with expertise, people with long-term experience with this disease, with management, with vaccine, and then, you know, give us the right information. But this information has been surprised. It's not been, you know, it's not been put out there. And now everybody's an expert. If you go on social media, you know, I mean, you know, everybody knows that everybody's an expert on COVID. And I tell people, don't go call your carpenter to fix your plumbing. You know, you don't want to call me to do your surgery. I'm not a surgeon. So you got to talk to my phone and get the right information. But in science, in medicine, things does change. When you think about back in the days when we used to take a gallbladder, we had to cut people open. Now we put 3 holes and take out the gallbladder. So we're going to see that in every process of medicine, that with new knowledge, with new technology, we're going to do things better, faster. Now you don't have to stay in the hospital for 3 days or 5 days after gallbladder. You can go on the same day. So just because you go on the same day doesn't mean that we didn't do it correctly. We're just doing it better. It's like your 1974 Cadillac versus a 2020 Cadillac. It's just better on gas, better on mileage. So we just got to convey that information out appropriately. And we have to leave politics out of it. And we really have to tell people, again, get your information from the right source. Don't get it from the politician. Look in the medical journal. Look at the NIH side. Look at the CDC side. Look at the side that are truly, you know, scientific. Don't look at the Facebook as your source of information. Friends are posting stuff online all the time, and everybody's giving their personal opinion, and they don't have any background in medicine. And so that's what's really, I mean, the social media is great, but it's caused so much damage and anxiety because every time you turn on Facebook or something, you hear someone posting some opinion. I have podiatrists, foot doctor, you know, making claims about COVID treatment. I'm like, you know, you can't do that. But people are, you know, who are their friends, they listen to them and they believe them because they are poor doctors, and they go out there and pull, you know, drink bleach or do something crazy like that. So I want them to actually look. We as a community, we are really affected by COVID. And not because of the skin of our, you know, not because of the color of our skin, it's just because of the situation, the socio-economic situation we're in. And when you look at diabetes, hypertension, cardiac disease, again, we always are, you know, impacted the most. So we have to think about how do we fix that? How do we prevent some of those things? So prevention is really key in terms of what we need to do to get healthy as time goes on, which that includes vaccination, and that includes eating healthy, exercise. But we need to get information to most, you know, all our folks. But we need to get it the right way. We need to get it from the right source.
Well, Dr. O, you know, the flu shot, if individuals are taking a flu shot, is that going to kind of help them even if they don't have the COVID shot, or can they take them both simultaneously, or should they take one after the other? Because one of the things is going to be, because it's getting cold in a lot of spots, a lot of places all over the country, and they may have a common cold, but because of the fear mechanism that's been planted, they'll think, oh, I got COVID. So how do you tell the difference between them?
Great question. It can be difficult at times because symptoms overlap. And that's the reason why I've been pushing for the last 2 months for people to get a flu vaccine, because at least you can think of one less problem. Yeah, flu vaccine.
Excuse me,
is not perfect.
Before you continue, okay, the flu vaccine. Now, with that flu vaccine, that's consisted of injecting you with the virus, with the flu. So the COVID is going to operate in the same manner, right? Is it going to be injecting them with COVID and hoping the body can fight it off?
No, they're different. Let me go back to the COVID vaccine for a second. So there are different mechanisms we're going to use. One mechanism is to take the genetic material that makes the spikes on the virus. That's one way. You put on a little, coat that with a little lipid, little fat cell, and inject that. Or you can take a virus, adenovirus, which is not a coronavirus. It's like you kind of disable it, and you put stuff in there to be able to create the virus, so to speak. Not the virus itself, but the stuff outside the virus. Another way is to actually take the pieces of those spokes and inject it directly. And then the fourth way, so there are four different ways of doing it, which is a little different from the flu. The flu, one way is to kill the virus or make it render infectious, or you use a live one, which is it's live, but you make it less infectious. And we don't actually use that as much. That was the one that we use in the spray form. But most of what we use now is just the dead virus, or kind of what we call attenuated, meaning that, we diminish its potency, that it doesn't cause an infection. But the flu vaccine is not perfect because we had to guess what kind of strain is going to happen. So we don't always get 100%. So sometimes we get 40%, sometimes 50%. So that's why some people say, well, I still get the flu. Well, you may still get the flu, but it may not be as intense. And the reason why we do it that way is it takes time to make the flu vaccine. So if you wait till the flu hits, we can make a flu vaccine that's 100% effective. The problem is if you do that, by the time we make the vaccine, the flu season's over. So you have to kind of prepare before. And that's the problem with flu, because it keeps changing. It doesn't stay the same. And that's why the flu is not 100%. But the goal is not to go for 100% prevention for flu. The goal is to either prevent or diminish your symptoms or decrease how sick you're going to get if you do get sick. So that's really the goal, or decrease transmission. But the coronavirus, if someone gets the flu and coronavirus, it'll be very difficult. That person will be very, very sick. And I've actually seen a case of that. So we don't want that to be the case. So if someone gets any symptoms at all, I say the best thing to do is go to your doctor. When I see a patient comes in with fever, headache, body aches, I test them for both, because I don't know what they have. Now, if it's the same things you might see with coronavirus, like loss of taste, loss of smell that you don't usually see with flu, but still during the flu season, I think you need to be tested for both, because you may have both, you may have one or the other. You start to really say for sure. To be a good clinician, you should test your patient for both, just to be on the safe side.
Wow. I'm one of those individuals that I didn't get flu shots forever. And then the 1 year I get the flu shot, I got the flu. And so from that one experience, I stopped getting a flu shot. Those type of experiences also play in people's mind about vaccines. Now, we've heard with one of the vaccines, and I'm not sure if the one that is manufactured by Moderna or Pfizer, one of them is a two injection process versus the other one being a one injection process. Is there a reason? Is there a reason for that? Is there a different genetic makeup? Is there a different, why is it that one requires two injections over a period of time, a second injection, and the other one only requires one?
Okay, let me just comment on what you said about the flu vaccine. Any vaccine that you get, it takes time for your body to develop a response to it. So if I give you any vaccine today, it's not going to be protective the day after. It's going to be protective a week after. So if you get a vaccine today and you get exposed to flu, you're going to get flu. And so when we do travel medicine, when people go abroad and we give them hepatitis A vaccine, we tell them, you got to come to us a month before you travel, because when we give the vaccine, it takes a month for it to become effective. So if you get exposed to contaminated food, you're going to get hepatitis A. So I think sometimes people forget that when they get a vaccine, they expect it to be immediate. It's not immediate. So that's just to clarify that.
But you get sick immediately sometimes when you get the flu shot.
The what?
I said, but you get sick immediately sometime when you get the flu shot.
Look, you can get some body aches and stuff for a reaction from the flu vaccine. That's correct. But that's different than, a dead virus cannot cause you an infection.
Gotcha.
So you can get side effects from the flu, from the vaccine itself, where you get body aches and pain and fever. Yes, you can get that, but it's not actually the real flu that you're getting. Now, if you get a live flu vaccine, yes, you can get a flu from that. So it depends on the kind of vaccine you have. Now, going back to the two versus one, the two vaccines that require the two injections are both the mRNA vaccine. They are prepared differently. The one that's one is the adenovirus vaccine. So the way they make it different and the way your body responds is different. So it has to do with the mRNA making, you inject that, so it makes the spikes, then your body responds to it. So mRNA is very fragile. So it can pretty much be dead if you don't package very well. That's why it has to be frozen. And from the time you take it out and inject it, if you wait too long or you don't prepare very well, the mRNA could just kind of die off and it won't be effective. So that's why the condition, how you prepare, how you administer, is very, very tight, because you're taking a genetic material and you just cover it with a little five bubbles, and you carry it around. So if you leave it unseen in the room temperature, it will dry out and it will be no good.
Yeah. As opposed
to the other one, which is like a virus, you're putting stuff inside a virus, so that could stand around for a long time. And so that one, the response rate is a little different. How you respond quickly versus the other one.
Why don't they just say that? You should be on the CBS News. You should be on MSNBC. I've understood more in these last few minutes about this than I've understood all along, because I think it's so over politicized that even when they have the expert, I don't know if they're timid or they don't say the things that need to be said, but people need to have some sense of safety and confidence. I mean, what you just explained, I might just get a flu shot, not this year, but next year, in terms of, because I now understand a little better.
Yeah, the problem is you have one station was Democratic, one that's Republican, and it's all about back and forth rather than focus on the people. And we've lost that. We've lost the fact that what counts is the community. People are dying while we're going back and forth, bickering back and forth. And it's not helping anyone.
Wow.
What can people do to minimize exposure to the virus?
I think the most important thing you can do is really, wear your mask and wash your hands. And what people think, well, that doesn't work. Well, it does work. Right now, we actually doing a study on flu right now, flu testing. And we, across the country, noticed that the amount of flu has actually gone down. We're not seeing that many cases of flu vaccine. And we kind of suspected this will happen because people are wearing masks and washing their hands. We won't see as many cases. And if only we can do that all the time, it would have been helpful. By the same token, I go down to some area, in town, I'll see young people packed, with no mask, like really bunched together, at the club, getting into the club and the restaurant, like they don't really care. But they get infected, they may or may not be very sick, and they go home to their grandparent who's older, who has diabetes and hypertension, and then they get infected. So there is this sense of I guess people are not really taking personal responsibility. It's not just about you, it's about you causing problems to other folks who are more vulnerable. And we have to be caring, we have to care about other folks, our friends, our co-workers, our family members, that even we, you know, we may not be that sick, but we may get somebody sick or maybe get somebody, you know, cause them to die.
How long does a bacteria germ last on a surface? Or like if you're in a grocery store and someone has the virus and not know it, they may be asymptomatic and they're touching things. And then you come behind them and you touch it and you may clean your hands, wash your hands. Like for me, I was wearing my gloves and then I thought, well, everything I touch is on that glove. And so I have sanitizer that I spray as soon as I get in the car. And when I get in the car, I have wipes. But what about, like I said, people that are asymptomatic, that are out there walking around, touching things and doing things, how long does that virus last on the surface? And is that why people are being infected even when they're taking precautions?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually talked about this earlier on during the pandemic. You know, there are some studies done looking at how long does this last on the wood, on the metal, on the glass, and it ranges from 2 to 4 hours. The problem is you don't really know when time zero is. So you go into the restaurant, you don't know when the person first touched that object. It may be six hours ago, it may be 2 minutes ago. So what I tell people is what's more practical is just assume everything is contaminated and wash your hands. That way you don't have to think about it because you don't know.
The other question I have is you're out at a restaurant and restaurants are saying that they have people wiping down and cleaning the area, but they have the same rag, wiping every table, disinfecting with the same rag.
Well, what I would say to you is if you ever see anything that you think is not proper, say something. And I think that's the best thing we can do because some people out there may not even realize what they're doing is wrong. I say, no, hey, you might use it. I just saw that at the restaurant recently I went to. The guy said, please, can you just change that, use a different rag, before you make my omelet. And I looked at him. I said, you know what? That's actually a good thing. I mean, it wasn't comfortable with what I saw. And he requested things to be done differently, and they did it. And I think that the people who are serving you may not realize what they're doing. No one talked to them about how to do it correctly, or maybe they just don't care. But if you call them out, I think it's the best thing to do.
Yeah, because I said that doesn't make sense. If you're supposed to be sanitizing a station, well, they did it even prior to the pandemic. They had the same rag wiping all of the tables. But now that we're in a pandemic, they're supposed to be sanitizing, making sure everything is clean where you don't touch and get the virus. But if you have that same rag and you're spraying that same rag over and over again and wiping, it defeats the purpose, correct?
Yeah, a lot of people do have like wipes that they use. But again, restaurants are supposed to have like distance and stuff like that. Some people basically don't have it. So again, I would just say that you leave the restaurant if you're not comfortable with it, or you tell them to do something about it. And that because you're gonna have places that are not gonna do the things the right way. And you just have to again call them out. Hey, can you please use a new rag? Can you use a disposable stuff? I think that's the best thing we can do to protect ourselves.
Hugh wants to know, do you recommend taking the vaccine as a Black person?
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things we struggle with. And I just had a conversation. I was having a conversation with some folks in NIH recently last week, just discussing the same issue about, the Blacks and Latinos are affected disproportionately with this disease. How do we get them to take vaccine? Because if they don't take the vaccine, guess what? We're going to be the one dying again from this disease.
Is it going to be free?
Well, I think it's going to be for the most part that the government actually put a lot of money in the vaccine to this company to make it, except for Pfizer. But the government is actually buying it from Pfizer. So it should not cost anybody. The only cost would be the injection cost, but the actual vaccine should be free.
But what about those who can't even afford an injection
cost? Well, I don't see it being a problem. I think everyone should be able to get a vaccine for free, regardless of their ability to pay. I think there will be programs in place to really address those altogether.
Okay. But Dr. O, one of the things that, you know, we have talked about is the fact of that fear factor. You know, we go back, we think about the Tuskegee experiment. And so we have a very, you know, very fluid memory of that. And so there is this sense of they're out to get us. They're out to get us. They're out to get us. And this is the perfect setup because the fact we're disproportionately affected by it inside of this. Now, if we're charged for it, we can't afford it. If they give it away to us free, that's because they're trying to kill us all.
We're free.
Right. So how do we find that middle ground to really, I mean, you've done a great job. And you basically, if you don't get it, your chances of, if you don't get the vaccine, your chances of contracting it is increased, period. Yep. But if you do get it, you know, what does that mean? Ultimately, what does it mean? Is this going to be seen as a one-time thing, or is it going to be like the flu shot where people need to get it every year?
Now, we what we know so far is that the vaccine currently, because this is happening in real time, at least for 2 months beyond the time you get your vaccine, up to 3 months so far that we know, the data we have, shows that it will protect you from getting, reduce your chance of getting symptomatic disease. There are still questions we don't know. Can you prevent a severe illness? We don't know that information yet. So there's still some unknown, but the goal is, can we decrease the chance of you getting COVID with, you know, with symptoms? And so far, we know this can do that 90% of the time. Now, when I first came to town in 2000, I said, you know, we need to bring research here, because when you think about Johns Hopkins, you know, Harvard, all the major universities, that's what make them number one, because they have access to this new therapy that people don't have. So I decided I was going to do it here. When I opened the research component of the practice in 2005 or so, anytime I brought the issue up about research, people go, no, I don't want to be a guinea pig. It was very difficult. So I had to keep engaging folks and talking to them. And I can tell you, 15 years later, we have a robust research department. We have a lot of people enrolled in research. But having said that, even though more and more of our folks are enrolling, but we're still not at the high at the number we should be. 50% of my patient population are Black, and maybe 50%. And our research component, maybe about 40% of our research are Black. So we have people who are really enrolling, and I can tell you, when they enroll in our research program, they actually enjoy it. When they finish the research, they're asking for, when is the next one going to happen? want to talk to them and to understand what's going on. And when they have a great experience, the experience they have during their research is actually better than when they go to their normal routine, because they get free treatment, they get free care, they get someone that calls them all the time, someone comes to the house sometimes, they get money out of it. So there's a lot of things that they get out of it, and they get great care. So which is what this is all about. So I think we have to move away from the word research being a bad thing, because if we don't have research, we won't have any advancement at all. And people who actually engage in research, we should actually thank them, because it's a noble thing to do. They're helping the world. They're helping provide information that we need. Without them, we can't, all the questions that we talking, all the questions that you have tonight, we'll have no answer for them without the research. So that's a very important thing, that we just need to trust the person doing the research. We need to trust the person we're going to for the research. And we need to be able to answer all the questions that we have when we go. We need to educate ourselves, basically. Right. It's like a car. You got to trust your salesperson.
There are people that have underlying health issues, and Shirley wants to know if you have a lupus. Do you recommend taking the COVID test with that?
Absolutely. Anyway, the COVID test doesn't really do...
What about CHF?
I'm sorry? Yes.
What about lupus?
Anyone can, Yeah, anyone can have a COVID testing done. All they're doing is taking a sample and testing it. So you're not, they're not giving you anything that's going to affect your underlying condition.
But what about the vaccine, though?
Oh, yeah, the vaccine, yeah. The vaccine, there's no contraindication to taking the vaccine at this point in terms of underlying medical condition. I mean, in fact, when your immune system is not great, you are more, you should be the one to be getting the vaccine the most, because if you do get the infection, you get bad disease. You may, you know, you're more likely to die from the infection. So those people are truly, that's the reason why we are targeting those folks first, because they're the ones that are dying right now. We don't want people with chronic illnesses to die. We want to save lives. So if we can at least protect those folks first, it'll be better. The young people are healthy, no underlying medical condition. Most of them will do well without dying from the disease. So those people can get the vaccine later. We want to take care of people who are more vulnerable. Healthcare providers who are going to be exposed over and over again, we're going to protect those people, because if we lose them, no one will be around to take care of anybody else. So protecting those people who are high risk, who are the front line, and so they can protect the community at large.
Okay, but if it continues to mutate into a different spawn, and you taking the shot and you have underlying health issues, doesn't that present even more danger?
No, at all. I mean, the what we know so far with the vaccine again is effective against the strains that are out there. And some of the treatment we haven't talked about right now, the monoclonal antibodies that we actually do currently doing research, some of them are going to be approved very shortly. And those monoclonal antibodies target 21 strains of the virus. So unlike the plasma, when you get the plasma is like you get plasma from a bunch of people, you may have two strains in it. So if you have, you know, if that plasma has strain number 2 and 3 and you got infected with strain number 7, that plasma might not help you. But if you get the monoclonal antibody that cover all these strains, that's going to be helpful. So those are the things that are, you know, we are looking at in terms of treatment and prevention. So our treatment is really targeting to cover pretty much broad strains of these viruses. And this virus doesn't really change like the flu. It's not one that changes so quickly like the flu. But based on what we know so far, the treatment and the vaccine should be good enough to cover what we have available.
Thank you for bringing up the plasma, because I had a question regarding that. Okay, so what is the difference between a person taking the COVID-19 shot versus getting the plasma? Like if you have insurance and your insurance covers the plasma, can you opt to do that instead of the COVID shot, the vaccination?
Okay, so the COVID vaccine is to prevent you from getting infected. The plasma is for someone who's already infected, and we're trying to treat them to get the virus.
And then you give them the shot afterwards?
Once infection is clear, yes, you can get the vaccine after all. Yeah, after the fact.
Oh, but okay.
Get the vaccine before you get infected.
Okay, but you can do you can have the plasma and then turn around and still get the COVID shot as well.
Yes. Well, so once you recover, you can get the vaccine afterwards. Yes.
Okay.
Well, Dr. O, you have shared some very powerful information with us, and understanding even the whole processes and the possibilities and the things that happen inside of this. What would you say that needs to happen in times like this, where we're seeing the numbers go through the roof, we're seeing record shattering infections each day, we're approaching 14 million, I believe, that's been affected in this country alone. What do you think has to happen to change the disinformation or misinformation campaign in our society that has created a lot of fear? What do you think needs to happen?
Well, given right now, I don't think we have the national leadership to really make this happen from a national level. I think what you guys are doing tonight is a great way to combat this misinformation at a local level. At a local level, if events like this happen where we educate the community, I think that will go a long way, because we're not getting it from a national level, from the top. So we got to do it from the bottom. And I think that if people trust, the people that are listening to, and we can engage with them one-on-one. I think we can educate them better, and they will learn more, and I think that really help. And again, the more we do of this, the better will be. And my office is, available. People can call my office. And if somebody gets sick or they feel they need testing, if they have questions, just pick up the phone and call us. And I think that's, sometimes people are afraid to call, or people are, well, we don't know what to do. We don't necessarily charge people for the phone call. If people call and say, I have a question, I have a concern, we'll call them back. We'll give them information that they need. There's no stupid question. I always tell people, you gotta ask. The more knowledge is power. No one can take away your knowledge. If you seek knowledge, no one can take that away. You can lose your money, you can lose your home, but knowledge you can lose. So seek knowledge, ask questions. And the more you ask, the better you know, and the more powerful you become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're almost out of time, but I had out of time, and someone mentioned the Tuskegee. What happened there with that?
Like I mentioned before, the Tuskegee experiment is about bad people doing research. It's not about the research. The research is just the act of, finding information. You just had a bunch of bad actors during the time of, slavery, so to speak, where people decided to use black folks for experiments.
Continuing to use that for experiments.
Correct. And it shouldn't have been that way. And so they knew what was wrong was that they knew these people were infected with an STD. They didn't treat them. They just wanted to see what happens with that treatment. And that should not happen. That's not the way a research works. Right. Research works in such that, well, today when we do research, if we say we think this drug is going to work, prevent you from getting syphilis, if we give you this medication and you go out there having unprotected sex, at the first moment you have syphilis, we're going to stop that study. We're going to take you out of that study and treat you. That's the way research is supposed to happen. But in Tuskegee, they did not do that. They just continued pretending they didn't know that those people were infected. So, so things have changed since then. We put rules in place. We put governing bodies that oversee research called IRB. We have the FDA. We have so many levels of governing monitoring that goes into place now that you can't get away with something like that anymore. So things are different, and people need to realize that. Again, back then was bad people doing bad things. No, it has nothing to do with research. What they did was not research. It was just bad things.
How can individuals connect with you? Do you have any books or anything, website that people can connect with you that way to find out more information?
We do have a website, the Triple O Medical Services or Triple O Research Institute, or they can call us at 855-7871, 855-7871. Someone's always available. If I'm not there, they'll take a message. I can always call them back. But I one of my goals is to empower the community. So I'm always willing to have a conversation. And I'm hoping that we'll have more of this conversation in the near future, just to be available and just to have a forum where we can have a discussion with our community.
Yes, I'm sure the public would love the opportunity to be able to do that. I'm responding to some of the messages that we're getting and questions. So I do appreciate you for being our special guest. And could you give that website again too, so that individuals can connect with you and I can post it on the social media as well?
www.triplooresearch.com.
Okay.
Well, Dr. O, it's been a pleasure having you with us. And I want to reach out and thank my dear friend there, Dr. Nurse Practitioner Rashawn. Rashawn, I go way back with her and I got a chance to talk to Mario, and you delivered and what we wanted. And we hope that we perhaps after the vaccines are released and they're flowing. Maybe we can have you back maybe in a month or two after that. We got to see what the, you know, what's the consensus then and what we're seeing.
See if we're still here.
You will be. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great pleasure. I mean, I really enjoyed this. I have to thank you. I mean, what you guys are doing is great. And I applaud you for doing great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this has been absolutely great. I learned more with you in this hour than I've learned the entire time watching the news. A great
now, I got to be honest with you. I'm still skeptical because I haven't had a flu shot either. So I've just been.
It's okay to be skeptical. It's okay. But what I would suggest to do is write down what your concerns are. Write them down in a piece of paper and we can discuss it. And I think that's the way to take away what that's, you know, if you still don't want to take it out of that discussion, that's okay. But I think people need to ask that themselves that question. Why don't I want to take the vaccine? Write the questions down. It may be something that after discussion, go, you know what? I should take it. But you might say, you know what? I still don't want to take it. But at least you educate yourself to know why you're not taking it. And that, I think that's what we can, you know, that's the best thing we can tell, teach people on how to approach things.
Yeah, and that's why you're here. And thank you for being here. And like I said, I'm not convinced yet, but I just wanted people to be informed because a lot of times we do things out of fear. So the more knowledge we have about what's going on around us and what options are available to us, it allows us to be able to move forward in a more relaxed situation. Not so relaxed that we don't take it, but so we won't operate in a spirit of fear, saying, if I don't get it, I'm going to die.
No, I mean, if you don't get a vaccine, and you know, if you get any signs of fever, cough, again, just pick up your phone, call us right away. Don't wait. Don't sit at home and do nothing. Just call, because the sooner we can get to you, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm an old school Bible believer, too. So I'm like, okay, is this the end? Is this the mark of the beast?
We'll be having another discussion a few years from now.
I know my kids be like, come on, Mom. And I'm like, hey, it could happen in my lifetime. Okay, well, so any closing remarks, Dr. J, Dr. O?
Well, again, like I said before, knowledge is power. Seek the knowledge, and this is a start. Don't let tonight be the end of seeking the knowledge. And go get the knowledge.
And thank you for being better than TV.
Thank you.
Definitely. You know, we think that we need to do this some more, and we can have our local expert right here, and listen. I think that people will receive it. I feel better. I might even go and get the flu shot after all of this. So, okay. <That's me.
laughs> Call me after you get it.
Hope you're right. All right.
So thank you all for tuning in for Hot Topics from the Soul. If this has been a blessing to you, I want you to take this and share it on all your social medias. And by all means, you can reach out and connect with Dr. O or Dr. J.R. Thicklin. You can always join me on www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Anything you want to know about Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, you can find it on fromthesoulofawoman.com. And Dr. J, your website?
You can find me at jrthicklin.com. And I look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Good night and God bless. And stay warm, America.
Okay. Take care.